Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Death Rock Jubilee, and our guest for this episode is someone who knows a little something about having fun on the dark side, Miss DJ Erica Scary, also known as Erica Moulinier. Did I do it right?
You got it right.
Yes. Hello, Erica. Thank you for doing this. And introduce yourselves to the wonderful folks who download this thing for whatever reason they do.
Awesome. That is correct. My name is Erica Moulinier. You're actually probably one of the only people who have said my last name right.
Well, that's because I asked.
That's true.
And there's
a
microphone in here. If there wasn't a microphone in here, we were just talking, I wouldn't ask. I would have just gone on for years.
So I am, what am I? I am a DJ. I am an accountant. I am now a record label owner. My new project actually is a record label. I promote shows in Pittsburgh and I do also book shows, and I'm learning, but I'm not good at doing sound. So I have a PA.
That's too many knobs anyway.
Right? It's a lot of knobs.
There's too many knobs.
It's a lot of knobs. So should I talk about like each project?
I also want to talk about this sort of larger, sort of death rock, goth culture. See, I could say that, but not that. But yeah, let's break down which project do you want to start with? The label, the accounting, the shows, the DJing?
I guess I'm going to start with So I moved here. I moved to Pittsburgh in 2009, and I met my neighbor across the street, Jimmy Rose, and who's the singer for Eel. And I told him a little bit about like when I learned to DJ in Philadelphia in like the early 2000s. I started DJing around that time, and I DJed a night with a Russian promoter named Polina, and she was the kind of brainchild around a death rock festival in New York City called Drop Dead Festival. And she was like one of the most interesting and inspiring people I've ever met in my life, because she was like such a boss. Like, she kind of was like, we're gonna do this thing and we're gonna do it. So she kind of saw me, because I would DJ like punk nights in Philly, just like on a whim. Like, people were like, you should learn this because you know more about music than anyone I know. And so I'm DJing these like punk nights, and I'm playing a little goth, like a little psychobilly, a little bit of like kind of a mixed bag punk night, really, like anything I want to play. Sometimes I'm playing Jesus and Mary Chain, sometimes I'm playing garage, sometimes I'm playing psychobilly. Like, it was sort of all over the map. And she is from New York. Actually, Princeton, New Jersey, but she hung out in New York. And she comes into this club in Philly, and she's like, you're going to work for me. And I was kind of like, I'm already characteristically, like, the person that's too nice. But at that time, right, this is, like, the year 2000 or something, so I'm especially too nice, you know? So I'm like, okay, I will, you know, I'll work with you and DJ. And so I worked with her for 5 years. And in that time, I like learned a lot. And she was kind of like this miracle person. She was like, I don't know what her career was, but she was she had a master's. She worked at Princeton. Like, she was super intelligent. She was like a Russian immigrant. She did all these nights in New York City. She DJ'd. She put on a huge festival. She brought like huge artists to this festival, like Nina Hagen and all these, like, you know, huge bands like Specimen. And I heard bands like working on that festival that like I'd never, you know, heard of. And she had this like kind of brutish like accent where she'd be like, you know, telling me like, we're going to promote this event, we're going to every event. And she'd be like, we have to go to every single event, we have to go to the Monster Convention in New York City and like look really fancy and promote our shows. And like, so we kind of like in that 5 years I like traveled really the world with this woman.
Wow.
And learned a lot about doing festivals and DJing and stuff. So then in 05, I met like a guy, and I moved to Seattle. I was living in Philly at the time, and we fell in love. I moved to Seattle. I took like a 4-year break from DJing and promoting because I was really focused like on my career. And then in 09, I moved to Pittsburgh, and Jimmy Rose just happens to, I buy this house, and yeah. Jimmy Rose happens to be my across the street neighbor.
Wow.
And he's like, you know, we're just talking or whatever. And he's like, I've always kind of been the person who, you know, like when I got into punk when I was like 13, I wanted to be a punk so bad. Mm-hmm. And everyone, all the punks would be like, you're a goth. And I was like, no, I'm a punk. And they're like, no, you're a goth. And I would try so hard. Like, I'd be like, I'm going to make these clothes so I can, like, look like them and be like them.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, it was like, there was nothing that I eventually just, like, gave in and was like, sure. if you guys want to say that I'm a goth, that's fine. I accept it, like, as it is. But when I moved here, Jimmy Rose was like, you're into goth and that's really cool. Like, nobody's into that in Pittsburgh. And I was like, yeah, I guess I am. And when I moved, when I lived in Seattle, there was all these super cool bands that like I heard and I was like, whoa, you can listen to, you know, they're calling this like punk music that's sort of like gothy or whatever, post-punk. And I was like, holy crap, like this is a new thing. And
yeah.
Like I saw bands like The Spectres when I lived there. And I'm trying to think what other bands I saw that I was like really, I saw The Vicious from Sweden and like just a bunch of great bands. And I remember like being at those shows in Seattle and like being that I was like so hungry for that music that I'm in these shows with like all these punks, no one's dancing but me. And I'm like losing my mind because it was like, I had been sort of waiting for this kind of music that I knew because I listened to like New Order and, you know, since I was like 11 or something like that. I'm 38 now. So, you know, at the time I was probably 27 and I'd been listening to New Order for like 16 years or something.
Yeah.
And so I was like, whoa, these bands like sound, they're punk bands and the audience is punks, but the music sounds like, it's like my dream music. Mm. Like it's like exactly what I want to hear. So Jimmy Rose is like, you should DJ with me. You should do events with me. And I was like, oh man. And then he's like, well, let's make playlists. And so I'm like writing these playlists and I'm putting them in his mailbox. And I'm like, we should, you know, just writing, like spending all this time, like writing all these playlists, like on paper. And he's like, just DJ with me. Like, let's do nights together. So I, you know, I did a couple one-off nights, and then over time, like, people started to, like, ask me over and over again. And I've never, like, been, like, a good DJ, like, technically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are, like, they're sort of, like, in the DJ culture, there's kind of this, like, thing where you have to, like, beat match and, like, be a hip-hop DJ, or you're not a real DJ. So, like, sometimes if, like, a real DJ is, like, DJ Eric is scary. Yeah, what do you do? I'm like, I'm more of like a musical curator than I am a DJ.
Mm.
Like I'm a person who listens to music like every single day, all day long because I work from home.
Same here, yeah.
And I find these bands and then I am like obsessed and I'll listen to these songs like over and over and over again. And I'll it'll sort of just like to the point where I'm like, it's like enveloped me. And I've always been that way. Like even when I remember being that way in like when I was like 10 years old, like hearing a song. And then, you know, my grandma was like from Italy and I'd be like, she's like the nicest, most generous woman. And she'd be like, let's go to the mall. Like I'll buy you a gift. And she would just buy me like one CD. And then I would have that CD or tape and I would listen to it like 1,000 times until I knew like every single word and like every chord change. Like it was sort of, that was like me, you know, in the laboratory of like punk, like making this like little human that was like, ugh, I'm just obsessed with music. So, you know, when people like were inviting me to do nights in Pittsburgh, I felt so grateful because I was like, man, this is like, I get to play music for my friends and they're stoked, and I get to dance and like, cause I love dancing. Like that's sort of like people, when people, comment like on my DJing, they're like, man, I love to watch you dance. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't even think about dancing. It's just sort of like, all the songs that like I play when I'm DJing are like my favorite song.
Mm.
And I'm just sort of presenting like my favorite song. So I can't help but dance because I'm like, no, this is my favorite song. Like you're hearing my favorite song right now.
Right now.
And I might have 100 of them throughout the night, but it's still my favorite.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's like a Labrador, that thing about the Labrador Retriever, you know? My favorite thing! My favorite thing! Yeah, which is totally just wonderful. So, a couple things I want to ask about. Well, first, though, I want to talk about, like, because I had very similar experiences getting into music.
Sure.
And for me, it was also, I'm thinking about now, even before, like, you know, I'm one of those people, like, I remember, like, if there's a conversion narrative to tell about my life, it was listening to really bad pop radio and hearing Smells Like Teen Spirit the first time. And I was like, what is this? You know what I mean? Like, I hadn't heard anything like that before. Uh-huh. And it, like, opened this door. Did you even also have this experience of obsessing over music before you knew what you liked? Because I had that experience, too, like, for years.
Totally.
You know, where, like, there was occasionally a couple off, like, I remember, like, Mexican Radio by Wall of Voodoo. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it just sounded different. Or Cars by Gary Newman. And I had no idea that there was this world out there that, like, no, you can just listen to Gary Newman all the time if you want. And there's things that sound like Gary Newman. And I think about it, that, and I think about, you know, what you're doing about, like, sort of fostering a culture. Even what Jimmy said to you is, like, this idea, how do you foster a culture as part of this, And the necessity of infrastructure.
Right.
Like, you don't think about infrastructure and death rock, but let's talk about death rock infrastructure.
Right.
What's that look like?
What is death rock infrastructure? Death rock, when people use the word death rock, it's really interesting to me, like, Dusty, who also works on Skullfest, he's the skull boss. We have this conversation sometimes about, so death rock to me, like, people kind of like argue about what death rock is, but death rock to me is actually Roz Williams, right? So Roz Williams, like Christian death, LA is like death rock.
Yeah.
You know, some people will say like Specimen or like other, like British bands, like they would be like, because it looks very similar.
Yeah,
they would say that Specimen like would be death rock, but I'm not a snob, I think that that's Batcave, right? So to me, that's Batcave.
Yeah.
So like the quintessential death rock to me would be like 45 Grave.
Yeah.
It sort of has this like California sound, you know, like it'd be like Rick Agnew.
Yeah,
and like anything that's sort of like related to that, and then, you know, as the years go by, it sort of like branches and becomes this other thing. But it's kind of like death rock is, it's punk, but it sort of like focuses like on the creepy aspect of things. It kind of has like an androgyny to it and like an art to it, which is really appealing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I sort of have never, like, going back to like when I was a kid, I always just kind of felt awkward about being like, you have to be punk. You have to look this way.
Yeah.
You have to be this. And I always kind of wanted to be like, I'm just going to wear a sweater right now. And it's still going to be punk. And I'm going to wear some, you know, I remember like the first time I saw the X movie, The Unheard Music, when I was a teenager.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, you can totally be yourself and be punk. You can, like, read books and draw and shop at vintage stores and, like, wear weird clothes. Like, it is what you make it.
Yeah.
And the scene around you is, like, actually what you make it.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's, like, kind of why I've DJed and done shows.
Yeah.
Because, like, as I've moved to different places, like, I was sort of thinking, like, okay, there's not really, like, I heard all these bands, like, when I moved here, I was like, man, there's no bands like the Spectres or,
yeah,
you know, but I'm going to make it, like, happen for myself.
Yeah.
And then so many people like Dusty or Jimmy have encouraged me to do that,
yeah.
Which I feel real grateful for.
Yeah, and it's so, I mean, it's the idea of, you know, so liberating, you know, I think about that sure. before time for myself, and it's just like, and it's weird because people still exist this way, right? It's like whatever is handed down to you, that's the culture that you get.
Right.
And that's so demeaning and dehumanizing uh-huh. and
right.
horrifying.
I think, though, that, like, it would be... It defeats the purpose of, like, being an artist or, like, mm-hmm. being punk if you feel constricted, like, in your vision of what that is.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine, like, being as old as I am. Like, not that I'm old, but
yeah.
38 and still trying to, like, fit into somebody's box or, like,
yeah.
idea of, like, how I'm supposed to be.
Because
I've almost found that, like, getting older and still being into punk is actually awesome.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to... I can be like, I'm just going to do what I want. And that's yeah, just
you know,
sort of
it's like
you,
you yeah. know, yeah, and I'm 40 and you just go to shows and you're like, man, is there going to be a place to sit down?
Right.
That's what's really important, you know. And it's right. funny you should say that. So I actually just conducted a little sonic experiment on myself before you got here. I, for Black Friday Record Store Day, picked up Why Can't Tori Read?
Wow.
Which is the... pop record Tori Amos put out in 1988
mm-hmm.
that sounds like I just had this vision in my mind of these coked out executives at Atlantic saying it's gonna be like the Thinking Man's Madonna. Woo! You know, like, I mean, and it was like this weird, like, this crude cage that, like, whatever she had to offer. And you get these little glimpses of what she did, like, 5 years later
uh-huh.
in, like, a part of a song. Like, the intro would be a Tori Amos song, and then it would go to, like, bad 80s movie soundtrack.
Right.
Keytars and just, did, you know, like, bad Oingo Boingo covers or whatever.
Sure.
You know, and it was just, like, weird to think, like, there was a time when if you were making music... there was maybe one or two paradigms you can fit into.
Right.
I mean, especially, I think, if you're a woman, there's one or two paradigms you could fit into. And, like... And so whenever I hear somebody, like, talk classic rock, man, it's like, you're pining for that.
Right.
You're pining for the crude cage.
Sure.
As opposed to the freedom that punk gave us all.
Well, I think that some of that is sort of, like, people are using music just like they use anything... for acceptance, right?
Yeah.
So some folks are using it for acceptance.
Yeah.
So they're going to be like, we all love, you know, the whatever, Garth Brooks or whatever mm-hmm. song. They, like, all want to hear I've Got Friends in Low Places
yeah.
in the bar on Friday night with, like, their friend.
Yeah.
Because it sort of is this, like, acceptance that they all know the words to this.
Yeah.
And we have that in punk culture, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, when I DJ, I'm like, I'm going to play this, like... Misfits song, because, like, you know, like, Misfits, whatever song it is, Devil's yeah. Whorehouse, right? Those sort of, like, catchy melodic lines, like, and that sort of, like, anthemic mm-hmm. like thing that makes people, like, wave their fist in the hair, like, at the yeah. at the bar, is sort of that gives people that same yeah. feeling of, like, well, we all know the words to, like, this Misfits song.
Yeah, it's like this cultural so glue awesome.
Absolutely,
this secret handshake, you know, I mean, and on that bookshelf over there is what we're also talking about is, I think, the works of Ernest Kasser,
huh.
who he's been forgotten. But he talks about how, like, with culture, there is this push-me-pull-you thing, right? Where
sure.
there is this creative impulse, he says, and then there's this conservative impulse.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the creative impulse is always going to be, well, what else is there? What else can we do? What else... And he's like, and that comes head on with this impulse of, no, but there's rules.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's interesting for me is, like, thinking about, yeah, like, punk culture.
Sure.
And, like, genre culture and, like, this sort of genre idea of music, you know, and how that comes into infrastructure when it comes to putting on shows or a DJ set.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, how those two impulses collide. Because he says, yeah. you know, in Essay on Man, that all... cultures have those two forces that collide at
right.
every moment, and it's like at that collision is where cool stuff happens, or I'm more of a, like, let's see what else is out there kind of person. But it is interesting how, like, but there's still this, like, but, well, oh, is that punk? You know, moment? Like,
well, that's what I think, you know, like, is my goal, like, when I'm DJing, right? Mm-hmm. Is that I'm like, okay, I just heard this song this week. It's like this 1981, like, Belgian song nobody's ever heard, but it's the coolest post-punk song I've ever heard in my whole life.
Yeah.
So I'm going to DJ that tonight. But I also want to look at the crowd and be like, okay, they really want to hear, everybody really wants to hear, you know, whatever song it is. It's
Misfits.
Maybe it's the Misfits or like
Bikini Girls with Machine Guns.
Maybe that's their song.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like what DJing is, right?
Yeah.
When you're like a rock and roll DJ or whatever, it's more that than it would be like, I'm going to mix these beats together and it's just going to be this like dance vibe. It's being a rock and roll DJ is more like, I want to play the weirdest, coolest song ever that maybe one person in the room will hear and be like, I love this song. Like, I love this song as much as you love this song.
Mm.
That's where the moment you want.
It's the mixtape. It's the, I kind of like you.
Sure.
I'm gonna
totally.
For songs that I like and how I feel.
Right?
Right? I mean, it's that same geek love moment.
Right.
Right? You get to live that geek love, 16-year-old geek love moment at 38. What a world it is. Yes.
But then you also get that adrenaline moment, too, where you're like in this club and you're DJing and you're dancing and all these other people are dancing and they're losing their minds, right? And you're dancing on stage, and it's sort of like this feeling of like, you know, there's so many feelings that you feel when you're DJing. They're like excitement, nervous, you know, and that's kind of like you're just always trying to make the best night, you know.
It's like a seduction or something, right? You
Absolutely.
Know, it's like that's amazing. And I think it's also interesting, you know, speaking of push me, pull you moments, on how, I mean, like for me, like one of my favorite shows of the year is Goth Night at Skullfest.
Huh.
That's one of, because it's just so much fun. You know, I think as I had that moment, I had that epiphany. I think it was when, was it the Bellicose Minds were playing this year. And I think the guy was like, this is called Theater of Pain or something, or Pictures of Pain. I forgot what the song was, but the pain was in the thing. And then everybody just did that Charlie Brown dance.
Right.
Like, it was like, this is about pain. And then everybody's like, hey, you know, and it was just the most fun.
Right.
You know, or a couple years ago when Sour Ground had those giant pink hair and the guitars. And I was like, this is the most wonderful thing in the world. And it's so, again, it's such an interesting, because, you know, it is this, you know, and I think we've all seen, you know, the Pitchfork Brief History of Goth, you know, which is hilarious. Like, is it, like, are we laughing with them or at them? I don't know. But that you have this mix of this joy.
Right.
And darkness, you know, like, and that to me is also so fascinating, how those two things come together in this culture.
Right. I mean, I think you can see that when you're listening, you're like, okay, I'm gonna listen to like The Cure's Disintegration versus The Cure Wish record.
Yeah.
Like, and I'll listen to those two records like back to back, you know what I mean? And there's even some joyful moments like on Disintegration, but like not that many.
Pictures of You.
Right.
Pictures of That's You is true. The most beautiful song That's ever true. Written, maybe.
That's true.
Like, if it's not the top five.
Right, sure.
I mean, that is such an amazing...
Right. So, that's the thing, you know, it's like, I think that's what... one of the things that, like, has always drawn me to, like, goth culture is that, like, I tell people this all the time. It's like, I never have to pretend that I'm tough. Like, you guys have to go to punk shows.
Yeah.
You know, there's, like, skinheads and punks and, like, all these other people, and like people are like, yeah, I'm tough, and I'm like, I'm real weak. I'm so weak. I don't even have to pretend that I'm tough.
Yeah.
I don't even have to pretend that I'm happy ever.
Yeah.
I could just get to feel how I want to feel all the time.
Yeah.
Because that's like, or you know, which I really enjoy that. It's like it's real. It's like an authentic experience because I'm kind of never pretending. You know.
Yeah.
Because my culture is like. Like, my subculture is sort of like, you are what you are. We'll be sad if we want to be sad.
Yeah.
We almost celebrate sadness in
a
way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Which is, I think, such a humanist impulse, mm-hmm. right, is that you celebrate all aspects of the human experience.
Sure.
And you don't fetishize. And I mean, isn't that the thing about, like, mainstream cult, if there is a mainstream still, but, you know, it's just like, everyone's happy all the time.
No.
Kind of like mall culture, which is just horrifying.
That's not real.
And that's not real, and I think that, for those people, I find that dehumanizing. Like, I literally find, like, a lot of that shit, like, just morally offensive.
Right.
Which is too. A weird thing, I know, for people to be like, well, he's talking about goth culture. And I was like, no, this is what's morally right. offensive. Smiling all the fucking time. That's morally offensive to me.
I would say, one thing that's been rough this year, like, I don't want to talk too much about, like, the political landscape or whatever.
Yeah, hey, welcome to the podcast.
Sure.
You know, it just intrudes. I think sure. if you're a thinking, feeling, aware human being, how does it not insert
right.
itself into conversation and consciousness? So go ahead.
So one thing that I've noticed this year is I am a little downer than usual.
Yeah.
And so that's been hard because, like, being a person who kind of is on, like, at least once or twice a week, I'm doing something.
Yeah.
In, like, our community, like, a punk community, be it, like, doing sound at a show or DJing or... And so it's kind of been hard because it's like, man, I'm having a hard time, like, presenting joy. Because
yeah.
you do, that's the thing about, like, being a DJ or, like, a promoter. Even though you, I don't have to pretend I'm happy, mm-hmm. you also don't want to be like, yeah, hi, guys. Come to my night. It's cool. I'm totally bummed about this Trump guy. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's, it's sort of been a thing that, like, I've kind of been struggling with. And, that's why, you know, I have a night that's coming up. It's called Neo-Noir with Eric Ascari and DJ Killjoy, and that's at Belvedere's. And part of why, like, I've chosen to cut back on that night is just because of, like, the amount of responsibility that, like, I've taken
yeah.
on and stuff I've added this year. And I just kind of need a little bit of a break so that I can, like, spend some time with myself.
Yeah, self-care. I
right.
mean, that's... So I mentioned this on the podcast a few times, and I actually finally read this book, Depression of Public Feeling by Anne Svetkovich.
Uh-huh.
She's buds with Kathleen Hanna. Actually,
Ooh.
Kathleen Hanna gets... It's an academic book. It's on Duke University Press, and Kathleen Hanna gets the first quote.
I'm sold.
On the back, yes.
I'm buying it now.
So the first half of this book is her depression journal from graduate school, and then talks about these maybe alternative ways we should think about it. And she calls it a public feeling, and it very much is about this idea that, you know, yeah, if you are a thinking, feeling person who cares about stuff and other people
right.
and certain values,
sure.
when you see those values being eliminated from public life,
right.
how else are you going to feel?
Yeah.
What else are you going to do?
Right.
And yeah, and for her, it's about finding community and self-care.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, thinks about depression in this sort of non-medical cultural way, which makes the book problematic for, you know, if you're a psychologist or something. But I think for a lot of people, there's something to learn there, this idea of
right.
like, well, what does it mean to live in times like these?
Sure.
How do you get out alive? How do you get
right.
out?
Well, I mean, it makes sense, right? We're
yeah.
humans are like
yeah.
a pack animal.
Yeah.
So, of course, like, we're going to feel the pain and suffering of those around us.
Yeah.
So, in times where things, like, feel a little more bleak, like, in our society,
mm-hmm.
it's going to impact everybody.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some people out there that are like, woo, yeah, boy, we're finally getting ours. But I'm like, I've never met one of those.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're out there.
They're out there. That political article about Johnstown, you know? It's like,
right.
and I have family out there, and I was actually just in Johnstown the other day, and I was just like, this is Trump's America. This is it. This is what people want. I don't think they have a lot of joy.
Right.
But they have a lot of righteous burn it down anger, I guess. That's
right.
something, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But at least, I mean, but they have Fox News, and they could get that emotional hug.
Right.
Whenever they want. They just need cable. And you just turn it on and you go, oh, this is right. I'm right, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And I don't know, punk's just a lot more constructive and liberating. But
right.
Yeah.
I think I am going to be honest that there's a degree to which, like, I'm shielded. Because
yeah.
My business, like, I'm an accountant. But I work from home. Like,
yeah.
I really work from home. And most of my clients are, like, musicians and punks and artists.
Yeah.
And, you know, small businesses. Mm-hmm. But everyone that I work with is pretty like-minded.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I'm a DJ. So all the, most of the people that are coming to my DJ nights are like, again, artistic. They're like people who lean towards subculture. Mm-hmm. They're progressive. And so on, like, frankly, I like don't have a lot of exposure to people with different political views than I have.
Yeah.
And it's kind of makes me feel a little sheltered in a way.
I think it's, yeah, it's true. I mean, I think about me as like, if I didn't choose to go to college where I went to college, and if I didn't have still have family in a certain part of the state, I would have no connection to that world.
Right.
I mean, it's just this weird, like, there's these two solitudes.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? But then again, I don't know, one of those solitudes I think is really destructive and toxic, right?
Right.
I mean, because it's this weird narrative, right? Because people, you think people come to the city to get away from.
Right.
You know, away from that. It's weird, like, this idea, these people who, you know, people are massively fleeing their part of the world or their part of the country.
Uh-huh.
And then wondering, you know, why this thing out there is different, and why does that work and my thing doesn't work, and shouldn't my thing be like their thing?
Right.
This thing that, you know what I mean? And there's no, you know, because you think that part of the world also lives in a world of uncritical nostalgia.
Right.
You know, whereas, yeah, I mean, if you're celebrating pain or whatever, but that's at least, you know, I think you're not fetishizing life, that you're saying, you know, there's this other thing that's happening.
Yeah.
To me and to us.
Sure.
Which, it's almost like, I mean, you think about it, I mean, you know, the medieval Catholic Church would have those feast days.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? You know, that's the feast of the guy that got crucified upside down this week, or, you know, whatever. You know, and then we'll have the next day for that other saint that got killed the other way. You know what I mean? I mean, it's almost like, you know, yeah, are we the humanists that are left?
Right. I mean, that's really, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I'm not Catholic, I'm not religious, but I grew up like in a Catholic family basically, and I was sort of raised like with that culture, and I see a lot that like Catholicism and like goth have this like connection.
Yeah.
Because we're just all really celebrating like flowers and darkness and saints with like blood like dripping. And it's interesting because like
the body,
right? A couple years ago, I went to a festival in Chicago, like, with my friend. I can't remember what it was called, but it was, like, a Latino, like, alternative festival in Chicago. And there was a Morrissey impersonator, like, who was, like, Latino, but it was, like, a huge thing.
Oh, wow.
And I saw him. It was so cool. And I was reading about that, like, such a huge proportion of Morrissey's fans are Latino. And I'm like, I wonder why that is. So I read some articles like about the connection between Morrissey and like Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about like how people that like are into goth or, you know, people that are attracted to music like Morrissey are a lot of times love like the imagery that he's using, which is very similar to the imagery in Catholicism.
And, you know, I think about like how just the Smiths still sound fresh.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like part of me is like, I do partition and say like, remember that context of what the 80s were like?
Mm-hmm.
And to hear this other thing that was this like sort of, again, joyous pain.
Yeah.
You know, now it seems like it's weird because now you mentioned Morrissey, like it's now it's like almost like he's abandoning that.
Right.
You know,
I know, in a way.
Really weird, shitty.
Sure.
Like, I'm not a white nationalist, but I just like certain people better. You know, like,
my heart hurts a little bit.
It hurts.
It hurts a little bit. But
there was that really good essay on The Quietus. I don't know if you read that.
Mm-mm.
Where, you know, basically saying that the aesthetic, like Morrissey has like started to abandon what made him great. And this switch to kind of punching down as opposed to like this voice of the downtrodden to now suddenly being this guy who punches down is like, yeah, no, it's really not cool. And he's like, doesn't understand what made him great, or he lost that.
I feel like though that sometimes like when you see that's a person like that's hates themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. When you kind of go inwards that way and you're sort of like, you're looking at the people that made you and they were inspired by you because of the way that you were able to reach them, like with your, you know, Morrissey has, like, his lyrics are so, it's like unrequited stories of unrequited love and like sadness and all these different topics that makes him really relatable.
Yeah.
But he also has this like bravado, like he's really confident and sexy, you know, which is also appealing to folks. But, you know, that's the thing, is it's almost like he's turning on his fans.
Yeah.
Maybe because he hates that himself that he created. That's this sort of like, you know, androgynous, like, person that has all this bravado and sadness and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's almost like, is it that also, too, did he just become another out of touch rich white guy?
That could be, too.
You know what I mean? Like, what's that appeal? You know what I mean? How does that door open?
Yeah.
That you just, well, eventually no one will ever say no to me ever again, and that's what I think the world is like, or...
Right.
You know?
Well, like, oh, I've also talked about, I hate to say Dusty's name again, but we talk about this sometimes, that I've always been Team Robert Smith anyway, so it, even though it hurts a little bit, I am not that hurt, because when I, you know, it's like, I tell people all the time, Robert Smith is who I am, and Morrissey is who I want to be. Not so much anymore, but Robert Smith is sort of
Morrissey,
like,
1986.
Right.
Morrissey, 1986. Queen is dead, Morrissey, is
who you want to be. You want to be this sort of, like, sexy guy who's, like, on the dance floor, skinny and, like, perfect.
And but you're really... doesn't care, you know?
But you're really Robert Smith. You're really, like, messy makeup in the corner, like, you know what I mean, with some cats, maybe... some floppy boots on, you know, ill-fitting clothing, messy hair. That's crazy cat lady.
Yeah.
That's who you really are.
That's who you know? Really are.
So while I'm sad about Morrissey and I...
It's distressing, yeah.
I'm also like, it's not that big of a blow. Robert, I'm still lifetime...
Still Team Robert Smith, yeah.
For sure.
I get you. So, I guess the other thing we need to talk about, let's talk about this label.
Sure.
Can we talk about the label? You started a label.
Yeah. So, my primary DJ night is called Second Skin, and it's a night that I do with Aaron, we're going to call him Aaron Eyeliner for the sake of his interview, because that's his punk name. So, he approached me, you know, within the first couple years of me moving here, and we started a night that's bi-monthly at Brillo called Second Skin, where we play post-punk, synthwave, new wave, death rock. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've worked together as in the DJ format for 3 years. And he's like one of the most encouraging people in my life now. He's always, you know, encouraging me to, you know, if I have a band, like we had Belgrado at Skullfest 2 years ago, and I was like, can I call it Second Skin? And because it just happened to fall on that day. And he's like, absolutely. So like we've, over time, like my shows have kind of connected with our dance night. So within this year, he approached me because I have been booking a lot of post-punk gigs in Pittsburgh, like over the last couple of years. And he was like, what do you think about doing a record label? Like a post-punk record label?
Yeah.
And there's a couple like in the US that... Yeah. I love and, you know, are awesome, but there's really not a lot, like there's not one in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
There's not really one in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of my friends, like over time, like as I've toured with bands or booked bands, like, you know, a lot of them have had a hard time, like, getting a good record contract. And so I was like, man, I would definitely do a record label. Because it gives, like, a chance... First of all, it helps, like, us grow a post-punk community. Or death rock community in Pittsburgh. And Pennsylvania, for that matter. Or even whatever you want to call the mid-Atlantic. I don't know. Where do we live? I don't
where
know.
We're mid-Atlantic. I always say mid-Atlantic, the gateway to the Midwest. We are not Midwestern.
Right.
Go to Cleveland.
Sure.
Go to Youngstown. You are in the Midwest.
So it kind of
But we're the last outcropping, you know. We're...
So it helps our friends.
We're the border town.
right?
Yeah.
It helps our friends to have a post-punk label that's focusing on that. And it helps, you know, our community. It helps bands to get shows. And so, you know, we just did, like, set up our business. Like, in the last few months, we've been setting up our business.
Wow.
We have three records that... We already have three bands that...
Oh, wow.
...are signed to our label.
Fantastic.
And we're probably going to put out, like, four records a year.
Great.
But it's really exciting. It's, like, something I never thought that I would do, you know, is have a record label.
Yeah.
So, when I went home and told my parents are, like... there's so many people you talk to that, like, are punk, and they're like, my parents are terrible. And I am not. My parents are, like, the nicest, coolest people ever.
Mm.
So I go home and I'm like, Mom and Dad, like, they're like, what are you doing? Because they are always curious about, like, what I'm doing, because they think I'm famous.
Mm.
Which I am, like, you know, my parents, like, think I'm famous.
Yeah.
Because I'll be like, yeah, I'm starting a record label. And they're like, you're definitely famous. And I'm like, I am not famous. I'm a punk. Like, we do these things ourselves.
Yeah.
We don't really have, like, limits about what we're working on. And they're like, nope, you're totally famous. And I'm like, I'm not famous at all. Mm. But it's, you know, it's really encouraging.
It is that thing, yeah. I mean, it's such a liberating paradigm. Because I think about even, like, this podcast, you know. I mean, you know, I've had bands on. You're on this right now. You're literally living this moment. You're living my teenage fantasy, because I remember at 16 years old, like, listening to music and just thinking, people who make this stuff, people who do this stuff, they just live on another planet. Like, they're so totally inaccessible to my reality, and I'll never know anybody in a band. And,
right.
You know what I mean? Or I'll never get to meet people who make stuff that I like. Yeah. I mean, that's just not... And it's weird to, like, if I told, you know, 16-year-old me, well, listen, when you're 40, these are the things that are going to be happening in your life. No. And, you know, I'm sure, yeah, your parents are part of that same moment, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, it's like, I think, like, if someone comes up with an idea and I don't think it's a terrible idea, like, I don't think... I'm not, like, a crazy risky person, but if it's something...
You are an accountant, after all. We need to talk about that, too, right? You can't be crazy risky if you're an accountant.
I am a professional nerd.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
I don't really, like... I'm not really particularly risky, but if someone comes to me and says, like, we're going to do this, and I think it makes sense, like, my nerdy practical brain can, like, rationalize it, I'm like, I feel challenged. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you were, like, at the end of this, you were like, let's do a death rock radio show. And I, you know, thought that it made sense. I'd be like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. I'll do that. Because I don't want to say no to stuff.
Yeah.
Part of it is that I'm probably too nice. But another part of it is also that I'm like, what if I say no to this and then it doesn't happen? And maybe, like, one person will hear the radio show and feel like they'll hear a new band. You know what I mean? They'll hear, like I'll mention a band that's, like, this awesome band, and they'll never have heard this song or something. Or, you know, like, that would be a bummer.
That,
like,
would be a
bummer.
I might as well
try it. You know, it's like, be a conduit for what you want to happen.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, it was also just a wonderful moment of creativity. Of, like... figuring it the fuck out. Like, how does this work? How does one do such a thing? And figuring it the fuck out, right? I mean, that's... And that's such a wonderful... I mean, as we sit in this room that is one of the rooms in my house that's a library, it's not the only one.
Right.
You know, I realize, too, it's like, for me, is that I'm an addict to the joy of discovery. I'm totally, hopelessly addicted to the joy of discovery.
Right.
You know?
I talk about this all the time with, like, people that come in. So, like, as an accountant, you talk to all these people that are starting businesses all the time. And there's kind of, like, I hate to break it down to two, but there's kind of, like, these two business types of people that want to start a business. There's, like, the visionary And the visionary is a person who has ideas all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to come up with these new ideas. And then, you know, that's sort of the entrepreneurial mindset. It's like, I have this idea. Let's do it. And then there's the executing type.
Mm.
So I am an executor, man.
Mm.
I am not a visionary. Like, I don't come up with new ideas in my head and be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to, like, start this awesome business. I'm, like, the person who's, like, you come to me and say, here's my awesome idea. And I'm like, okay, we'll do that. And then we do it. Because I like to, like, almost execute other people's dreams. Which, you know, because it's weird. I'm just that kind of person.
Well, I mean, is it that there was that Slate article a while back, you know, which I think explains my personal relationship. Chaos Muppets and Order Muppets.
Uh-huh.
Chaos Muppets are like, you know, like Animal Gonzo, whatever. Let's do this thing. And then totally. You need an Order Muppet that yeah. like, okay, this is how we do the thing. Or this is how we execute.
You just put your hand into my heart and reached in. And now you know that I'm an Order Muppet.
You're an Order
That's
Muppet.
That's me. I'm totally an Order
The world
Muppet.
Needs Order Muppets.
Yeah, I am an Order Muppet. Order and I'm Muppet. Proud of it.
Yeah.
I like to, when I was a little kid, I used to like, my grandma would give me, she would have these huge chain jars and she would roll them, she'd put them on the floor and she'd be like, you can have all that money if you roll it all up.
Mm.
And so I would sit there and count quarters and like count, you know, because I loved counting so much. That's like how I ended up becoming an accountant because I was kind of, it's not, I don't love money. Like I don't, yeah. I actually kind of hate money, but I love the actual act of like counting because
and it is the order and it should all add up, right? It should all literally all add up.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that's like, it's weird that the thing I'm organizing or ordering as an Order Muppet is punk, which has no order, but that's kind of what I'm doing. I guess I'm a punk who's an Order Muppet who's, you know, or like organizing all the punks into doing little things.
Well, I think, you know, and I think it's one of the ways that, you know, the damage that Quincy episode did in 82. You know, I mean, this idea, you know, I think for me it's now thinking about it because, you know, I guess you can call me a punkademic or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on an edited collection about that, actually, with Damon of Silence and Daniel Couch on the West Coast. I'm like, what does it mean, you know, what does it mean to be a punk at heart and then you're part of this institution whose structure predates our idea of the nation state? You know, you're in these 14, yeah, I live in the 14th century professionally. Literally, the 14th century is about where you know, my world, that's what my world, that's the university. The idea of the university dates that far back.
Wow.
And its structure really hasn't changed. I mean, there's ways of operating and notions and stuff like that, but, you know, no, it's the 14th century is where I live. And what does it mean to be anti-establishment and then think about peer review and the ultimate establishment thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's that way that what people don't understand about punk is one, that it is a humanism, that it was not, yes, there was this language of destruction and this language of anarchy, whatever. But that was about the ways in which human needs. I think people get to this, you know, because they realize that the way the world works doesn't.
Sure.
You know, and it's wrong. And maybe it is, there is this deep sense of outrage that maybe people might even not necessarily be able to articulate immediately. Just know that this is wrong for people. And it's like the way that, yeah, vegetarian veganism comes in. It's like, this is wrong for living things.
Sure.
Right? That's the one thing. And the other is, I think people don't understand the idea of that there is a work ethic to it. You know, that is so strong that it wouldn't survive if people weren't like, okay, we have this thing. Now it's time to go to work.
Yeah.
And it's maybe not work in a way that people from on the outside recognize
it.
But it's work.
I mean, you know, I think we're like, we're all kind of, again, we're pack animals. We're all like little squirrels. And we all need like our nut to polish.
Yeah.
And it's awesome if your nut to polish is like something you love.
Yeah.
So if your nut to polish is like the academia, right?
Mm-hmm.
My nut to polish is like, you know, organizing people's like finance, punk people's finances.
Yeah.
And you can just pick like, okay, I'm going to, you know, use this gift that I was given.
Yeah.
Like, when I was 5 years old, to, like, count quarters at my grandma's house to, like, use it for folks that, like, are disenfranchised. You know what I mean? Or folks that don't have access to.
Yeah.
Like, I think our government holds, like, financial information, like, at a premium.
Yeah.
So, if I can be like, let's do taxes in like a subversive, you know, not subversive in
way,
that, like,
but
it's
a
wrong.
Way that, you know,
right.
Yeah, I mean, this idea of access, this idea of
right.
How do you get, yeah.
Absolutely, like, you where you give people a chance that wouldn't normally get to have someone that's like advocating for them or, you know, helping them with their money, which is hard to manage.
Yeah.
You know,
it is a skill set
right.
That...
Sure.
You know, I mean, I had this horrible moment many years ago in a classroom, and it was around the financial crisis when it happened. And granted, it was a freshman composition class, but I don't even know what we were talking about, but I threw out the ideas of principal and interest. And none of those kids knew. I mean, they had gotten all, at that point, high school diplomas, had no idea what principal and interest meant, what those words were. And I was like, okay, time out. Wait a minute. Let's work on this idea for a second. But you need to know these two terms to understand how you're going to, the rest of your life is going to function.
Right.
Because you've already signed a student loan promissory note.
Right.
Because you're here. Principal means this. Interest means this.
Right.
And yeah.
I'm like, man, I wish everybody could just take a home ec class.
Yeah.
Because, like, my home ec class, like, we learned how to make cinnamon rolls, but we also learned how to, like, sew our pants.
Oh,
and then we also learned...
Yeah, I had that kind of education, too, which
basic
is gone.
Basic finance, like, the most basic level of finance, like, how to balance your checkbook, what interest is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, man, why don't people have home ec anymore? That was a great class.
Yeah.
That's like Life Skills 101.
Life Skills 101, how to fold a newspaper. I remember that. I mean, I remember in second grade having the class on how to fold a newspaper, how to read a newspaper.
That's my second career, home ec teacher.
Home ec teacher, yeah. I mean, I had this moment. Here's not that damn millennials, but I had my students do a library scavenger hunt because the big research paper was due last Friday. I spent the whole week grading them. But as part of the library scavenger hunt, they had to go and find a physical book in the library for their project. And they had to do a shelf scan.
Wow.
Because, you know, card catalog, like, keyword search is great.
Right.
But one of the most fruitful things for me doing research is actually going and looking at, okay, I found the book I need.
Right.
What else is here? What else is on this shelf that might not have come up on the thing, but, you know, in the browsing. And I had students ask me, like, okay, so... how do I find the book? Like, do those numbers that came up on the computer, where are those numbers going to be on the book? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like a moment of like, oh my God, you've only Googled. You know what I mean?
Right,
and
it
is this question of access, because then you think, well, then what if you get the un-Googleable question or the Google Wash answer? How do you take control over your situation and maybe your mental landscape or the knowledge you have access to or your money or whatever, you know, is, I mean, that's, again, that's a humanism, right? That's a humanism that is, I don't know if that is necessarily reflected in mainstream American culture or mainstream global culture.
I mean,
in scary ways.
One of the things that's really cool, like, about Pittsburgh is, like, it's the only place I've ever lived where, like, in our punk community, we have, like, a dentist, we have an accountant, we've got, you know, a welder. Like, we sort of have, like, when you had, like, the play school set and there was, like, a firefighter and, like, a farmer, it's like the village people of punk, you know what I mean, where there's all these, like, individual people with all these trades, and, like, really, we could all, like, go to the Crest farm and, like, make our little perfect world if, like, you know, the apocalypse went down. You know, because everybody has a skill.
Yeah.
And we're you know, making this kind of, like, bigger unit, which is super cool. Like, that's kind of why I probably still live in Pittsburgh. Even though I'm not from here.
Yeah.
It's, like, I'm inspired by, like, all my peers that are doing all these cool things all the time. So.
Yeah. Well, on that happy note, so let's skip to the bottom five. But yeah. So again, so it's Play Alone Records and PlayAloneRecords.com. Do you have a release schedule coming up, or what's where are you in the queue?
So one of the bands we have coming out is Silent Age from Chicago. They're in the studio. So that one should come out in the spring. Another band we have coming out is called Shadow Age, and they're mixing.
You're doing the Shadow Age record.
We're doing a Shadow Age record. 7-inch, and they're mixing now. They're remixing their 7-inch, and then that record will come out. And then, so check out those bands too. Check out Silent Age and Shadow Age. And then we, our third band is actually Aaron, from that I work with on Second Skin, but we also have Play Alone Records together. He has a new post-punk band in Pittsburgh, so stay tuned for that. We have a new band, which is exciting. So they remain unnamed, but it's coming.
It's coming. It's happening.
So that's the record label, and then I have for my business. My business is called Moulin, MOULIN Consulting, and little slogan is. Accounting and tax preparation for dreamers and misanthropes. So that's my website is MoulinConsulting.com. So if you need some
best.
Tax season help or bookkeeping or just general money advice, hit me up.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Or when everybody else starts their label. Right. Wouldn't that be great if everybody had a label?
Yeah, right?
You know.
Absolutely.
That's why I bought a tape duplicator. Let's just do it. Everybody just make it.
Totally.
All right, and also then there's Second Skin,
yeah,
which I'm sure that's on the FaceTube, right? Is there
Absolutely.
A Second Skin Facebook page, or is
there? There is a Second Skin Facebook page.
And all of those links will be on the website on the podcast. All right, and so now it's time for the bottom five. Bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and/or philosophical nature. Erica, you ready?
Uh-huh.
All right. Question one. Standard question. Everyone gets this the first time they're on the podcast. If reincarnation is real and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease or illness would you be? Like, if you got to choose, like, it's like, no, like, in that, like, sort of Buddhist hierarchy thing, it's like, no, you really fucked up. You got to go back to single cell and work your way back to human.
Wow.
Single cell, what would you choose to be? If they're like, but you can choose. You can be a disease or an illness.
Which disease? See, you're a lot smarter than me. I'm pretty
not really.
My intelligence is practical. It's not. So which disease would you die from the fastest? Because whichever disease you would die from the fastest would be the one.
I think Ebola is pretty bad. I think that takes you pretty quick.
So I think I would be Ebola.
Yeah.
Just to eliminate the suffering.
So yeah, I think it's a 90... Well, I guess it's... Well, so Ebola in the third world, though. That's the thing. Ebola, this is the thing people don't understand. It would not be a problem in the United States.
Right.
Because we have medical infrastructure.
Sure.
We can pump people full of gallons of saline solution and give them mega doses of vitamins that they need. Now, in worlds that don't have gallons of saline solution and megadoses of vitamins, people die very quickly and it's a 90% death rate.
Right.
But we could probably help people out over here because we have that. So, but I'm thinking about things that take people then here.
Right.
I guess maybe we had Ebola without that. I mean...
Yeah.
Stupid modern medicine, yeah. No suffering, yeah.
I mean, okay, so maybe that's the caveat. I'd be Ebola with advanced medical technology in poor third world countries. How
there
about
you
that?
Go. Okay, yeah, that's it. That's, and then suddenly the world
you
works.
Gotta,
and
right?
Everybody has access to healthcare.
Absolutely.
Because healthcare is a humanism. There you go.
Totally.
All right, question two, which I picked up beforehand, and you sort of already answered it, so I have to say, okay, so roll and change with your grandma.
Yeah.
Tell me another happy but somewhat unremarkable memory from your childhood.
Oh, man.
And so it can't be you went to Disney World.
It has
but
to be happy.
Happy, but unremarkable.
Wow.
You know, sort of like rolling change on the floor of your grandma's. It's the perfect answer to that.
Right.
But you've already given that answer.
Sure.
So what's give me another one.
My childhood is really weird because I don't know if it's like I did too much acid or something when I was in high school. But like my... But my memories of, like, childhood are, like, these sort of, like... Like, imagine you're watching, like... like a projector, like roll of film, and you sort of get these like images like in your mind of like being with your parents, you know? And so like the things that I remember are sort of these like little tiny like pictures. But I can remember like every single detail of that like 2 second moment.
Oh yeah?
You know, but I can't, it's like I don't remember like a lot about being a kid. But most of my like best memories are probably just talking about my, going back to my grandma.
Yeah.
Like, my grandma was the nicest person on the planet. Like she was like,
yeah, Italian grandmas are the best.
She was like best. A great cook. She had a garden that was like probably bigger than your house and yard.
Yeah.
She made her own cheese. She made her own wine. She made her own pasta. She made jelly. She was really like this person that was like, she's probably my best friend in the whole world, that my whole life. The person that I inspire, that inspires me, or that I aspire to be every day. So most of my memories are really just spending time with her, like going to, like she was a golfer. So I would like caddy her golf cart just because like, and I'm like, you know, I'm like punk, like carrying, I mean, I'm like wearing, you know, it's like, remember when punks wore those like cloud pants where, you know, they were sort of like in the street punk era, you know, where they're jeans, but then you got, you like sprayed them with bleach so they like looked punk. I would be like on the golf course with these like cloud pants and like maybe like, you know, some kind of like punk t-shirt that I made myself, carrying my grandma's golf bag. And I'm like, this is like, you know, I hate it. But my grandma was such a great person that like even just spending that time of like being on the golf course with her, even though I hated it, was like, I'll do that. Like I would do anything, you know, for to spend time with her. And even those things I did, that I remember like golf, are like not are pleasurable because it was like spending time with her. So corny moment.
No, that's the question. That's the question. All right, so let's go to another one. Another something completely different. Question three. Out of all of the possible ways to die, what's the way you least want to die?
Oh man. So here's another, this is funny. So my nickname is Erica Scary, but I am Jimmy made up Erica Scary, or sometimes people call me Scarica, but I am terrified of scary movies. It's like if I watch a scary movie, I will not sleep for like ever. Like in college, I went and saw The Blair Witch Project, and I had to sleep in bed with my roommates for 6 months after I watched that movie. So, you know, when I watch these movies where there's like, most scary movies don't scare me. Like, I'm not scared of Freddy.
Yeah.
I'm not scared of, like, Jason or, you know, even, like, I don't know. But the ones that are, like, really twisted, you know what I mean? The, whether it's like crazy psychological thriller.
Yeah, where the sort of atmospheric horror,
and you sort of get these like images in your brain and like you can't get them out. I am like, it's like hard to, like I can't even think about it because I'm scared. So I guess like dying in a movie like that, like in that kind of sort of way where there's like, I'm trying to think like, The Ring was super scary.
Yeah.
So, like, if that woman, if I'm, like, chilling watching TV and the Ring lady comes out of the TV and, like, kills me or whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of... That's not a good time. Yeah.
Or the Blair Witch is, like, chasing me in the woods. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. That's my worst, probably, like, death scenario. It's, like, some kind of weird, like, movie-like torture, like, terrified... thing, I'd be like, just kill me now. Like, don't make this take an hour and a half or whatever cinema time. Like, just do it now, quick. Yeah. Just take me out.
Yeah, I like it. And weirdly, okay, so what a wonderful transition. So question four is, name a film world you would like to visit or live permanently.
Really?
Okay. A film so world like, that you'd like to, like... jump into, if you, it's like the Gumby thing, if you could jump into the DVD box.
You know, it's really funny because, like, so when people, you know, like goth or whatever, or they think about goth, they think about like mall goth or like Phil Donahue goth, where you sort of like, or trench coat mafia. Like, I don't, that's like not what we're talking about in this interview at all.
Yeah.
Like, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
And so, the thing that sometimes like gets associated with like mall goth and all that is like steampunk, which I also hate.
Yeah.
The music. Like, I think that that is actually like a rave culture. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with like Susie and the Banshees or like what's actually, or like The Cure, which is like rock and roll music.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to lie that the aesthetic of like Art Nouveau, sort of like whatever that steampunk is really appealing to me. So probably movies like Lemony Snicket or whatever, like Series of Unfortunate Events, where they're kind of wearing these like clothes that like are like all like little bow ties and like black, you know, where everything's kind of dark but like beautiful, like glass and like you know, like it's not, it's like Victorianish, I guess, maybe, but like
I get you,
in an Art Nouveau kind of way. I guess that that would be like my film set, but with modern technology.
Yes. Now, have you seen the French film City of Lost Children?
Yes.
Fantastic. There you go.
That's my vibe. I'm into that.
Yeah.
People would
not Delicatessen, but City of Lost Children.
Yeah. People would expect me probably to say like, you know, Breakfast Club or something, Pretty in Pink. No way, man. Mm. I love New Wave and I love the 80s, but I lived there. I remember what it was like.
Yeah.
And Ronald Reagan and the Red Scare were not that great.
No. Was it Satanic Panic too?
Totally.
Satanic Panic too. I have a lot of friends now. I mean, I have someone who's working on like a performance art piece about her Satanic Panic experience, and I have a friend who's working on a book about his Satanic Panic experience.
Right.
As I think people of our vintage, that was a huge moment.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Geraldo.
Right.
You know.
That's the thing, right? Is that that's like what people's association is with goths, too. It comes from Geraldo.
Yeah.
Being like, look at these freaks. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you're like, no, man. Like, we just like cool music. And we're into art. And like, you're not, you know.
Yeah.
It was.
We care about. I think it's also we care about. I mean, again, it's like the 80s were so, you know. People trying to float in a cloud of lukewarm water.
Right.
And not mention or not think about the world around them and not think about other people around them.
Sure.
And, you know, the people who rebelled, you know, that was a way of expressing that. Like, no, let's care about things, I think. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I guess whatever that would be, aesthetic, Art Nouveau aesthetic with 80s music in as the soundtrack.
Yes. There you go. We're almost through this now.
Yeah.
Question five.
Oh,
question five. Of the living villains of history, so you have to think about evil people who are alive today, whose obituary would you most like to write?
Ooh, so they're a villain.
They're a villain alive today.
And they're alive.
Today.
I'm writing their obituary.
And you would be writing their obituary.
Does that mean I want them to die? Or does it mean that I...
Well, their death is inevitable.
Right.
I think it's more for... So, here's where the question comes from.
Yeah.
Christopher Hitchens, in his book Mortality...
Sure.
You know, the famous atheist...
Sure.
...finds out that has terminal cancer.
Uh-huh.
And one of his first thoughts was, man, I really wish... I was really looking forward to reading Henry Kissinger and Cardinal Ratzinger's obituaries. And he says, wait a minute, I wanted to write those.
Mm.
I wanted to be the one to unpack their evil as a warning to history.
Wow.
Or unpack maybe that moment. I mean, for me, like, the person I choose is someone who made a choice that was a really shitty choice.
Right.
And, like, what happened where they were a good person and then suddenly they were seduced by...
Sure.
This retrograde idea that, you know, fucked up the world or whatever.
Yeah.
And so for me, for some people, it is the glorious joy of, wow, you know, this person's dead and they can't do any more harm. Or is it that, like, you want to find out, like, what happened to them?
Right.
Or you want to be the one that makes the argument.
Yeah.
You know, that don't follow this lesson of history. Don't be this person. It can mean any one of those three things.
Sure. I mean, you know, I guess that I wish that I had a better answer than Trump, but I'm going to go with Trump.
I think it's a good answer.
Because I really, like I was saying earlier, like, I have a really hard time because I don't have a lot of exposure to, mm-hmm. like, people with different mm-hmm. ideas. Like, just mm-hmm. being honest, I don't understand, like, at all, yeah. like, how people could be...
There is a cognitive dissonance there.
Absolutely.
That, you know, I mean, what an unbelievably broken human being.
Sure.
You know.
So I guess I would like to write his obituary because maybe, like, I'd get an understanding of how someone could be so, like, lack empathy
yeah.
so much.
Yeah.
And be so, like, not having impulse control or, like, yeah. lack of caring about, like, other humans.
Yeah.
When, like, I think I have too much of all those things, and I wish I didn't so yeah. much. Like, I wish I was a little more apathetic sometimes that, yeah. like, things didn't hurt so bad, you know? Or that, like, I didn't... Like, I wish I could think about myself more, you know?
Which yeah.
It's like...
Yeah. Yeah, I get that feeling as well. Or, yeah, or not be emotionally invested in things.
Right.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that, like... Plus that, if I was writing their obituary, that would mean we're all free.
No, we're free. It's over, you know.
This nightmare is over.
Yeah, no, I get you. All right, so I think that's about it. So again, so it's playalonerecords.com,
uh-huh.
MulinConsulting.com,
uh-huh.
MulinConsulting.com, MulinConsulting.com.
Yeah.
Also, Second Skin Facebook page. Uh-huh. All these links will be on the thing to uh-huh. know what's coming. So what's the next thing you have immediately coming up?
Oh, my goodness. So the next thing I have immediately, oh my goodness, I'm going to pull out my calendar. I hope you don't hear too many jingle jangles
That's
of
all
my
right.
keys or whatever. My next event is the last neo-noir night at Belvedere's. It's an 80s night, and that one is Thursday, December 7th at Belvedere's, mm-hmm. and it's a dance night. It's the last one of that DJ night, which has been going for about 2 or 3 years.
Mm.
And that night's like kind of a traditional like goth night.
Mm.
I play new wave, I play post-punk. So come out for that.
Yeah. And Play Alone Records, the release cycle will start in the spring, I guess.
That's
in
right.
2018, look for that.
Mm-hmm.
Tax season, speaking of, New Year's coming up, right, already.
Yeah, right.
MulinConsulting.com.
Woof.
Woof, yeah. It's all going to happen. And, of course, then, you know, Skullfest in August
uh-huh.
and all of those wonderful yeah. things that you do. All right. So our next episode will eventually happen, and it'll be about something with somebody. Our homepage where you can find new and old episodes is GonnaDiePodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter @GonnaDiePodcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Thanks again, Erica, for doing this. Later, meets.